15 schoolgirls died in a fire in Saudi Arabia in 2002. They didn't die because the flames were unstoppable or because the building had no exits. They died because religious police blocked their escape. The girls weren't wearing proper headscarves and abayas. Firefighters stood helpless as morality enforcers declared it sinful to let improperly dressed girls leave a burning building. 52 more were injured. This wasn't an accident or a tragedy. It was murder by modesty culture, where a girl's headscarf matters more than her life. This incident crystallizes the brutal reality facing women across the Middle East and North Africa. Your body isn't yours. It belongs to your family's honor, your community's traditions, your government's laws, and clerics' interpretations of scripture. Nearly a century after Egyptian feminist Huda Sharawawi removed her face veil at Cairo's train station to applause in 1923, women's bodies remain battlefields where tradition wages war against liberation. The Arab Spring toppled dictators, but the harder revolution, against the misogyny embedded in homes, streets, and institutions, continues to rage. Growing up means learning that your culture fundamentally despises you. This isn't hyperbole, it's daily reality. Egyptian clerics instruct virgins to resist masturbation to preserve their hymens. Kuwait's Islamists push decent attire laws. Post-Qaddafi Libya's first priority, reinstating polygamy. Egyptian Salafis superimpose flowers over female candidates' faces because showing women's faces is apparently more dangerous than dictatorship. The statistics expose the lie. 96.5% of Egyptian women experience unwelcome physical contact. 95.5% face verbal harassment. In Yemen, where women are covered head to toe, 90% still experience harassment, usually pinching. If covering prevented harassment, Yemen would be the safest place on earth for women. Sexual violence isn't an aberration, it's systematic. Street harassment has morphed into vicious mob assaults, with 250 documented cases in Cairo's Tahrir Square between 2012 to 2014. In Syria, approximately 6,000 women were raped during civil war, targeted by snipers, used as human shields, or gang-raped in retaliation for male relatives' actions. Egypt's military conducted virginity tests on female revolutionaries after Mubarak's fall. Women risked their lives for freedom, and the regime's response was sexual assault. The logic is circular. Women must cover to avoid harassment, but covering doesn't prevent harassment, so women must cover more, and that doesn't work either. When Huda Sharawawi removed her face veil in 1923, waiting women applauded. Decades later, a Cairo metro passenger in niqab confronted another. "Why aren't you fully veiled?" She compared women to wrapped candy, precious objects needing protection. The response? "I'm a woman, not a piece of candy." Women veil for countless reasons: religious belief, Muslim identity, economic practicality, avoiding harassment, family pressure, political rebellion. Some find liberation in covering, others find suffocation. The question isn't whether individual women choose to veil, it's what widespread adoption has done to women's perception. The pendulum between conservative and liberal dress has swung repeatedly. Sharawawi's 1923 unveiling began decades of movement away from hijab. Then came Israel's 1967 defeat of Arab armies, Iran's 1979 revolution, and economic migration to Saudi Arabia, exposing workers to Wahhabism. The pendulum swung back hard. Some countries codified hijab into law. Sudan's Article 152 allows morality police to punish women with up to 40 lashes for indecent dress. The niqab represents an ideology that seeks to erase women entirely. The closer to God, the less visible the woman. This choice exists within an ideology that often denies women basic rights. Face veils impede nonverbal communication. How can we build society with half the population hidden? Arab society values a woman's hymen above her life. 5-year-old Lama was tortured and killed by her father, Saudi cleric Fahan al-Ghamdi, who suspected she wasn't a virgin. He served only 3 months before an Islamic judge overturned his sentence. Under Saudi law, fathers cannot be executed for murdering their children. Blood money laws and patriarchal courts ensure men face minimal consequences for femicide. Female genital mutilation persists through misogyny and religion. Despite official denunciations, many mosque preachers still instruct communities it's a religious duty. FGM remains prevalent in Sudan, 88% of women, Djibouti, Egypt, Mauritania, Somalia, and Yemen. Sudan practices infibulation, the most extreme form, where the clitoris and labia minora are cut and the labia majora sewn together, then reopened for intercourse and childbirth. Survivors themselves prove most effective at fighting back. Egyptian Nariman credits the revolution with changing her mind about FGM. Lawyer Nesma El-Khattab fought against having her younger sister cut. Ethiopian couple Jeanette Girma and Odyssey Abosi publicly rejected FGM at their wedding. Kenyan sisters Edna and Beatrice Kandi secured legal protection. These acts of courage challenge centuries of normalized brutality, one family at a time. Lebanese teacher Manal Assi was bludgeoned to death with a pressure cooker by her husband, while police refused to intervene in a family matter. This isn't exceptional, it's typical. Only Jordan, Mauritania, and Tunisia have specific laws against domestic violence. Recent reforms reveal the limitations of legal change without cultural shift. Lebanon's domestic violence law removed criminalization of marital rape, introducing instead the concept of a marital right to intercourse. Religious courts still handle most cases, prioritizing family preservation over women's safety. Sheikh Ahmad Al-Khoury defended this, arguing that criminalizing marital rape could lead to the imprisonment of the man, where in reality he is exercising the least of his marital rights. The UAE's personal status code exemplifies religious control. Women need male guardians to approve marriages, must obey husbands, can only divorce by renouncing financial rights, and receive half the inheritance of men. When confronted with religion's role in oppressing women, Muslims often respond, "This isn't the fault of Islam, it's Muslims who abuse religion." Yet the clerics opposing Lebanon's bill fully believed they represented proper Islam and had institutional backing. Until women wrest interpretive power from men, religion will continue justifying their subjugation. In 2011, Manal Al-Sharif was jailed for 9 days after posting a YouTube video of herself driving, inspiring dozens of women to upload similar videos. Some made it home safely, others were arrested and released only after their fathers pledged they wouldn't drive again. Saudi Arabia's restrictions on sports and driving aim to control women's mobility. When the country sent 2 female athletes to the 2012 London Olympics, ultra-conservative clerics denounced women's sports as sinful, a Western plot. The pioneers, Wojan Sharkani and Sarah Attar, faced vicious attacks calling them prostitutes of the Olympics. Despite losing quickly, both received standing ovations. Western powers often betray Saudi women through silence. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry refused to acknowledge the 2013 driving campaign, claiming Saudi Arabia had the right to its own social order. Yet a social revolution has begun. Saudi women use blogs and social media to create virtual spaces for self-expression. The driving protests directly challenge the male guardianship system. Until guardianship ends, all changes are just a show. In 2011, Egyptian Alia El Mahdi posted a nude photo online, challenging sexual hypocrisy. Facing vitriol, she asked why we're more outraged by naked bodies than sexual violence. Classical Arabic poets like Dana bint Mashal wrote fearlessly about desire. Conservatives claiming bodily discussions are Western erase this history. Sex education remains absent in Arab schools. Only 5 countries include reproductive health in curricula. Young people learn from internet pornography or religious talk shows spreading misinformation. Privacy is scarce. Young adults live with parents until marriage. Hotels demand marriage certificates, and couples seek intimacy on Cairo bridges or in cars, risking arrest. In Morocco, Article 490 punishes consensual extramarital sex with imprisonment. Yet activist Khadija Riyadi insists, laws help change mentalities. We don't wait for mentalities to change on their own. The real battle isn't between Islamists and military rulers. It's between patriarchy and women refusing the status quo. Revolution happens in living rooms and bedrooms when women say no to family control, street harassment, and systems valuing hymens over lives. It happens when women remove headscarves despite parental rage, drive in Saudi Arabia risking arrest, refuse to cut their daughters, and speak openly about desire. Your body is not your family's honor. Freedom begins when you claim your body as your own.